straight ahead here, Republicans and Democrats both oppose it. So why are the feds bulldozing through Big Bend National Park in West Texas? The former superintendent tells us that more is at stake than just untouched parkland. Plus, inflation ticked up slightly last week, the war with Iran ongoing. Is the political fate of Republicans this fall riding on gas prices? Part of our conversation with Congressman Pat Fallon. And almost a dozen data centers, perhaps more, already operating in the city of Dallas. Councilmember Chad West says the city needs to get ahead of it here. What he proposes, how he expects AI will affect public sector jobs in the future, and council closing in this month on the fate of its iconic city hall.
Inside Texas Politics with Jason Whiteley starts now.
Thank you for being here. Let's begin the program, as always, with the top political headlines happening across our state. Pot and police raids. Houston voters will decide in November how cops there will handle them both. The first question is, should low-level marijuana offenses be pushed down the priority list for police? And second, should no-knock warrants be outlawed? Ground Game Texas got this on the ballot in Houston, but the Chronicle there reports that every time other cities pass something similar, state officials file legal challenges. Governor Abbott is pushing for tougher penalties for Texas teachers who have inappropriate relationships with students. The governor wants a minimum 10-year prison sentence. House Speaker Dustin Burgo says he supports it and suggested making this a priority when lawmakers reconvene in Austin in January. And the new Secretary of State says he will defend the open primary system in Texas, letting citizens vote for candidates in whichever party they prefer. The Republican Party of Texas, you might remember, filed a lawsuit last year to close their primary elections. The GOP is concerned that moderates and Democrats might cross over and influence whichever Republicans get nominated. Secretary of State Robert Haldon said that he's going to defend the current law and will leave it up to the legislature to change it when lawmakers return next year. All right, if Republicans keep their majority in Congress this fall, it could put our first guest in line for one of the most powerful positions there in D.C. Pat Fallon wants to be the next chair of the Oversight Committee in the House of Representatives, the chief investigator there in the House. But maintaining that majority in Congress is the catch. Fallon is a Republican who represents parts of DFW and a long stretch of counties along the Red River. Congressman, good to see you again here.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Let's start with November, less than 80 days away. The war with Iran is ongoing. Inflation ticked up a little bit the other day. How concerned are you this is going to create vulnerabilities for Republicans going into November?
There's no doubt that Iran is going to be on the minds of the voters come November. I don't really see much change between where we are today and November vis-a-vis Iran, because it's such a complicated issue. Now, you could make very good arguments back before he took action to have him not do it, and you could have made very good arguments to say that he needed to. But once he's done it, and we've bombed the country 20,000 times, we have to see it through.
I want to burrow in here just a moment on the state of the economy. When the president took office in 2025, inflation was at 3%. Today it's a little higher, 3.4%. A gallon of gas when he took office, $3.08. I just passed it a few minutes ago at the racetrack around the corner, $3.85. The national average is $4.06. Will Republicans face political consequences for inflation, gas prices, and the like?
Yeah, I think one of the things we have to do as Republicans is remind them that under Joe Biden, inflation was at 9%. And what drives inflation? At the end of the day, it's government spending. And who do you trust to reduce government spending? The Republicans or the Democrats? We're both bad at it, by the way. And I'm a budget hawk, and I'm not happy with the spending that we see in
Washington. Republicans add almost $4 trillion to the debt since the president returned to office.
Joe Biden was 9%. Donald Trump, his policies, where actually, if we didn't get involved, now granted you could say because he gave the order, but if we weren't involved with Iran right now, I think inflation would be much lower. So 3.4, better than 9, but it is going to be a binary choice. And I think you could say, I can give you an answer within 30 to 60 seconds that I think would be an effective message.
We've seen four polls now, including one from Fox News, showing Tallarico ahead of Ken Paxton in the U.S. Senate race. What do you make of that?
I think it's going to be a tight race. I really do, and I'm going to put my political analyst hat on. I'm a very close friend of Kent Paxton's. I worked with Tallarico and him in the legislature. I don't usually like to use nicknames and things, but Tallarico, I can't help but say Talafrico, because he's a weird cat.
He likes that. He loves
right?
that.
Well, he's freaky. He's freaky left. Name. He's freaky left. He's freaky woke. He's freaky liberal. He's perfect for Austin, and he's terrible for Texas. At the end of the day, I do think Talafrico will lose. I think it will be tight. I think Ken will win between 1 and 4 percentage points, because at the end of the day, when you look at the binary choice that you have, which you have, Ken Paxton will reflect the values and priorities of more Texans than Talafrico will.
Why is Talafrico resonating with Texans, do you think?
Well, they don't know him yet, and wait until the right of center spends $50 to $100 million to explain to Texans who James Talafrico is. They just don't know who he is yet. They know who Ken Paxton is for the last 12 years, and Ken's, let's be honest. I mean, Ken's got some baggage. He was impeached by the House, not good. He had those indictments. Nothing really came of those, but there's always going to be some smoke, and some people react to that. Now, it could be nothing. I don't think it was anything significant at all, but some people go, well, there was just a lot. So I don't know about this guy. I think that's what the issue is.
You announced back in April you're running to chair the Oversight Committee.
Yes, sir.
The chief investigator for the in the House of Representatives. If Republicans don't keep the majority in Congress, what happens to your plans for oversight chair?
If we don't keep the majority, I'll be the ranking member, hopefully. And if I am the ranking member, I want to battle. I think what the Democrats will do if they take charge, they're going to start impeaching everybody and open investigations into every Trump family member, every single agency and cabinet post. And we're going to have to battle against that and tell the American people the truth and not let them use their gavels and their bully pulpits to mislead the American people. And really, we just want to expose truth. And as a good journalist would know, truth in context is more important.
Congressman, good to see you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, sir.
All right, let's bring in the roundtable to put the headlines here in context and talk about the politics of this. Bud Kennedy with us from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Natalie Haddad, political reporter at WFAA in Dallas, and Ashley Goodoe, political director at KVU in Austin. Bud, let's start with you. Ken Paxton facing criticism from the right, Fox News and others saying he's not working hard enough. Paxton's campaign pushes back on this. What do you make of this?
Well, this all comes from the vacation he took over the 4th of July, the photos of him in London. It's like people say, what are you doing going on vacation when Talafrico is going all over the state? And, Talarico's got all these ads out and Paxton's money still hasn't come in. Talafrico has just stacked up all this goodwill. I mean, right now he could say he wants sex change operations on puppies and people would like him over Paxton, who's got this shady history.
Natalie, let's shift off to a press release we saw from Talafrico. Talarico's really, really pushing hard for this debate. And the Talafrico campaign said, listen, Paxton has not yet agreed to a debate. It's been 28 days since he, proposed this. Is a debate going to happen, do you think? Do you expect it to happen? And which side is going to benefit more?
I would like to say that I expect it to happen, but at this point, in this moment, I'm not too sure. And I'm wondering what is Paxton's deal? Like, what is his hesitation? I don't think policy is going to be the issue. I think eventually he's going to have to consider the unpredictability of him and how voters are going to take that. His team said that, yeah, they'll debate, but the deadline has come and gone. There's no debate, concretely set in stone. And so I don't think policy is going to be the issue when it comes to those thinking about voting for Ken Paxton. It's going to be the unpredictability of him.
And Ashley, we're 60-something days away from early voting beginning. We're closing in here.
Yeah, I mean, we're running out of time. And I think that, when it comes to the whole debate issue, when it comes to Paxton not working hard enough, I think for a lot of people, what they see as the issue is he's running like an incumbent instead of like someone who is trying to get an office that they've never held. That's what you see with Talafrico. He is boots on the ground, trying to get his, message out to voters. And, Paxton, I think, is just sort of relying heavily on the name, heavily on the fact that Texas is red, and folk feel like that's just not going to cut it this time around.
And we shall see how things pick up after Labor Day when people really start paying attention. Guys, back to you in a moment. A lot more ahead.
When we come back here, council likely to decide this month on the future of Dallas City Hall. Councilmember Chad West on what to expect there and Dallas's need to catch up with all the data center construction. Plus, neither Republicans nor Democrats can stop it. The long-term effect of the feds bulldozing through Big Bend National Park. The former superintendent up next on Inside Texas Politics.
This is Inside Texas Politics with Jason Whiteley.
Welcome back to Inside Texas Politics. Dallas City Council met in the middle the other day, putting more than $400 million in bonds on the ballot in November for improvements to police and fire, but not the money needed to shore up the police and fire pension. Our next guest is Councilmember Chad West, who says it's now time for Dallas to also catch up to other cities on something else that's regulating data centers. Councilman, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You organized a public hearing on data centers. We've heard a lot of talk from other cities across the state. The governor's taking aggressive action here. What more do you want to do in Dallas on data centers? Slow the growth, regulate the growth, get compensated for the growth? What's the idea here?
The main goal is to make sure residents have a say in where the data centers are going to be. Right now, it's kind of a free-for-all. We don't have this whole industry has blown up so quickly that the zoning and the planning for this type of use has not been able to keep up with it. So the request was for the plan commission to take up a review of the appropriate zoning, where the data centers should be located, where they should not be located. We have dozens of data centers throughout the city that I was not even aware of. I had asked, well, is this one location a data center? And staff said yes, and there's also like 15 more. And so we have a lot.
These are already there.
They're already in operation in the city in areas where they believe and staff believes the zoning is appropriate. So we're now catching up with the data center explosion to make sure we're regulating it for the future.
City Council decided to put a bond on the November ballot, more than $400 million. The other option was almost $1 billion in bonds. Why did that get pared down so much?
After going through the discussion with the chief financial officer, listening to the community, the majority of council agreed that it was wise to not do the pension obligation bonds right now. Just financially, it doesn't make sense.
Because interest rates are high or what?
Yeah, interest rates are higher, and there's a potential that it could actually cost us a lot more money than save us money in the long run. So we didn't have the evidence that showed that this was a good time for us to do the pension obligation bond.
Do you expect the city's going to have to make any more job cuts?
City managers indicated that through efficiencies and through consolidations of apartments, departments, and then also through AI, that there are some job cuts in the city. It's less than 1% of the total overall personnel. She has not indicated there's going to be any more at this time. But I think every year it's going to be the new normal that as we find more efficiencies, as we adopt technology in the city and AI, there's a potential that some jobs could be eliminated.
You think so? Every year that could be on the line?
I think it's possible. I mean, the city has got to embrace technology and AI just like private industry does. We've got to become more efficient. And I think AI can help us become more efficient. You still have to have personnel to assist with that. But the question is how many personnel?
Last thing, hottest topic right now, besides the budget and bonds, is the future of City Hall. Any idea when the public's going to see numbers on how much it's going to cost to move Dallas City Hall elsewhere?
According to city manager, should be later this month, sometime in next week or on the last week of August. And that's what we've been asking for all along, is the apples to apples comparison of staying in City Hall versus moving out of City Hall, so we can tell the taxpayers these are your two options.
What do you expect these numbers to show?
I do expect the number to show that it's cheaper for us to move out and to reprogram City Hall. My question and concern will be how much? What is the delta there? You know, we've gone through a lot of pain, a lot of political drama for us to get to this point. I think it's worth finishing the discussion and then deciding what to do from there.
Councilman, thank you.
Thank you.
You know, data centers have united Republicans and Democrats in this state, and now so is Big Bend National Park. Border Patrol is bulldozing through scenic terrain there, despite objections from elected leaders on both sides of the aisle. Bob Krumenacker is the former park superintendent. And on this week's Yolitics, he's asking why so much destruction when capturing undocumented immigrants there is already so rare.
No one crosses through the canyons. And we worked very closely with Mr. Doggett's staff to help him get the facts right on that. And we are very grateful to he and all the other congressional representatives who are coming out in defense of Big Bend. But, you know, one of the things that's challenging right now is this is a political podcast or TV show. we are nonpartisan. We will talk to people of any party, and we want to. Very, very few Republicans, although that's starting to break, are saying anything. Ken Paxton has come out in favor of the wall, but that's probably because Tallarico said he's against it. But Don Buckingham, the state land commissioner, and John Cornyn just earlier today have come out with statements. But I think it's also important for the politicians to understand it's not just a wall. You know, it does look like at this point they're probably not going to build a 30-foot wall, and we're glad to see that, and we applaud them for that decision. But vehicle barriers where there's no chance of vehicles crossing, and hundreds of miles of patrol roads and cables and wells and man camps and blasting of mountains, it's still incredibly destructive for very little benefit and massive cost to the taxpayer. You know, one of the big unknowns, because we've seen them talk out of both sides of their mouth, is lighting. You know, many border infrastructures have had stadium-type lighting that you know, light up the night sky. The Greater Big Bend area, bigger than the national park alone, is part of something called the Greater Big Bend International Dark Sky Reserve. Now, there's no law and no teeth behind that, but that is a cooperative program with the U.S. and Mexico and most of the local counties and jurisdictions where everybody realizes that these are the darkest night skies in North America, and that is also a major impact on the tourism economy.
Up next here on this program, the roundtable is ready when we come back.
This is Inside Texas Politics with Jason Whiteley.
All right, Bud, Natalie, and Ashley are back with us with the roundtable at this hour here. Let's talk about the Big Bend mess right now, Bud. I want to start with you on this. Republicans and Democrats from all corners of each party, all in opposition to this. Why can't anyone get this to stop?
Yeah, the thing is that the people who are looking at it from hundreds of miles away say, well, we've got to build a wall on that border. And there's no question that immigration does happen. Border crossings do happen. You can drive the roads out there along the canyon and see the little shreds of cloth along the barbed wire fence show you where someone's climbed up and jumped the fence. But the numbers are so minimal, the damage is so great, the cost is so great. You know, the people who want a wall through Big Bend have never been to Big Bend.
Probably so there. Natalie, what do you think this is really about here? Because he's right. At the end of the day, the border captures there are very rare in number.
Yes, I agree with Bud. And I think the problem here is not so much, at least here in Texas, you know, politically, the border security is such a big issue. Here, it's not about whether there should be border security in Texas. It's about whether all stretch of the border needs the same solution. Do we need a border wall like this in a place that is so, that has a lot of cultural and economic and environmental concern if you were to put up a border wall there? You have those on both sides of the aisle saying, can't we install some new technology instead of bulldozing this precious land for a border wall? So I think it comes down to, is this solution, this border wall solution, needed in this very spot?
And Ashley, in the last segment there, one of the things the superintendent told us is that more Republican voices need to be outspoken, including Ted Cruz. Would he even help?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, would he help? I don't know. You know, he is a controversial figure on Capitol Hill. Not everyone just loves them some Ted Cruz. But I do think that the problem is, it's the aesthetic, right? For the Trump administration, it's the aesthetic of having that wall done and having it go through these areas and through Texas. And particularly when you have Republican voices in Texas who have called for build the wall and who have called for the federal government to do its job. Well, this is what it looks like when the federal government is doing its job. So yeah, they need to step up and say more if they're going to want to try to stop this from going through Big Bend.
But let's shift off to the race for governor. Several polls show Greg Abbott and Gina Hinojosa really tight in this race here. What's your reaction to that? Is this the Tallarico effect or something else?
Well, I think the most interesting thing is that you have the 5 points, 5% of people who say they're for Hinojosa and or for Tallarico and Abbott. And you know what you're seeing there, though, I can tell you, is that, you know, fraction of voters in the valley, there's still a substantial number of Latino voters in the valley, men who will not vote for a woman, and they're still favoring Greg Abbott. The race is close because, and particularly because data centers are in the news. And I just came from a trip to Palo Duro in West Texas, and everywhere we stopped, people wanted to talk about data centers.
And at the end of the day, though, Natalie, I mean, how do you expect this race between Abbott and Hinojosa to shape up? We really haven't seen this in a number of years where they're Abbott's this close with a Democratic competitor.
Yeah, Ms. Gina Hinojosa definitely benefiting off the enthusiasm that has been generated from the U.S. Senate race with James Tallarico. I think Vicky Goodwin running for lieutenant governor is probably in that same boat, and I think they're both going to benefit from, again, just that enthusiasm. How it ends up in November, can't really say, but I do think that if Gina Hinojosa wants to get over that threshold, that one point that we're seeing in some of the polls that she's behind Abbott, I think she's going to have to really step up her game, especially to the young generation in the same way that James Tallarico has. So I look forward to seeing how things look in this race after Labor Day.
And Ashley, let me ask about Abbott. At the end of the day, this is going to force him to spend a lot more money than he probably anticipated spending if these polls hold as they are now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, he's already spending money, right? Like, he's not necessarily targeting Hinojosa in his ads, but he's spending money already. He's been spending money. The problem is, can Hinojosa get some money to spend, right? Like, she's going to have to find some money from somewhere to really, really compete with him, because we know that Greg Abbott's money is long and that war chest is big. And so it's going to really come down to those dollars as we get closer to Election Day and we start to see all those ads and mailers and stuff like that come out.
And we will see them soon. Guys, we appreciate it as always. Thanks for being with us. Thank you for watching as well. We're back next Sunday to take you inside Texas politics. Take care.